pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War. I am your host, Alexeyev Card, joined by my co-hosts, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And Levitain.
Good evening, good evening.
Before we jump into the stories this evening, I would just like to remind everyone that Noir has reformed our mercenary corporation, and we are looking for pilots. We are trying to, maybe triple the number of pilots we have by the next year or so. So we definitely have spots available. And we are looking for PvP specialists, not just F1 pushers, but people that know how to do logistics, combat scouting, really high-end tackling, probers, e-war guys. Like, if you can do these things, we really want to have you. So, please contact myself or any of the hosts of the show in-game and join our public channel, Cafe Noir, with a dot at the end. Hopping into our top stories... With the CSM 14 minutes have come out due to various real-life factors. Your beloved hosts have not had the ability to fully read them, done about half at the moment. However, we will be reading them in time for the next episode, which we will, barring anything amazing that happens, pretty much entirely devote to minutes. So tune in to Declarations of War 184 for a CSM minutes discussion. There is a lot in there to tear into. In the meantime, though, we've had some interesting leaks, which I personally do not find very surprising, but do like the sound of, Triglavian Dreads.
So, like, real talk, this leak is such an actual leak, it has been now removed from CC. Like, the module which had the data in it, which read the Triglavian XL weaponry, whatever, has now been changed so that it doesn't say that anymore. So this is like a proper, oops, we didn't mean to put that on CC leak.
I mean, there have been hints for Triglavian capital ships coming out for a while now, and I think with the value that a Triglavian dread could bring to the game, I don't think it's very surprising at all that they're going to be happening.
Also worth noting, like, with the expansion coming on Tuesday, at least when we're recording this on Tuesday, the invasions in the foothold systems are getting new. They're called Stellar Accelerators, and they're supposed to have special, like, impacts on the areas they're in. So think, like, wormhole effects happening in invasion systems, which can spawn randomly throughout high sec and low sec, and maybe null sec possibly in the future, because we started seeing some invasion systems, particularly the perimeter ones, spawning in low sec. And that's sort of how it began creeping its way, they're spawning in null sec now. And this is the same pattern we saw when they first started making their way into low sec.
And not to spoil, but that does tie in well to the CSM discussions where CCP floated several times the idea of more weather effects appearing in systems generally, and possibly that the Triglavian invasions might be a way to do that.
And so, I just want to state for the record, removing logistics is not a viable option. Do not remove logistics. Thank you.
Apparently they were not serious about that, which again, we'll get into next time.
Don't even joke about removing logistics.
Alec, just think of how much trolling we can do to Artemis between now and the next episode. Come on, man.
That's true. But yeah, CCP floated the idea, and then was like, oh yeah, we just remembered we can't remove an entire profession from the game without consequences, so let's not do that. But you never know. CCP has done dumber things in the past. You never know.
Looks like they're also increasing the size of the forward operating base reward packages, so that now you need to put a freighter on field in order to scoot them.
How do we feel about that?
Awesome. Well, kind of awesome, kind of not awesome. Like, the dude who was responsible for most of the thefts of these things, Cable Uta, made a Reddit post where he shared, like, his stats, and he ran In total, he looted like 80-something of these things, because he ran 40 himself, and he stole 41 and tried to steal but failed to steal 3. So he had something like a 98% success rate with looting this crap. And so, like, I mean, there's a part of me that, after talking with him and learning how he does his thing, I know that there is counterplay to what he does. People just haven't figured it out yet. And so CCP is sort of removing his gameplay just because the EVE community hadn't figured out how to counter it yet and was getting super salty about him. So that's kind of cool. Like, props to Cable for forcing CCP to make a change because he outwitted the rest of the EVE community. But whatever. This is going to be interesting because you can't even use a jump freighter. It has to be a regular old freighter.
Yeah, it'll definitely add a little bit of spice to things. I mean, you could see now suicide ganking to try to steal will definitely probably be a thing, I would imagine.
I mean, 100% somebody is just going to YOLO in a Titan to doomsday the freighter. Like, that is going to happen multiple times, I guarantee it.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe that's good. Titan on the field, now you can go fight that. So, we'll see how this plays out. It seems like a nice chaosy change.
You'll probably just drop Dreadnoughts in, because the thing is, if you drop a Titan in, you're either unsupported, in which case you're going to die, or your Titan is basically bricked up to its eyeballs, and following it will be faxes and everything else.
Well, the way that these things are run, like, there's really not much there to catch you if you're in, like, one of the YOLO Titans, like the Speed Ragnaroks or whatever, that people use to gank Rorquals. Like, specifically Skill Yourself and Volta used to do it all the time. Those sorts of things, nothing will catch them on that grid with the way that people farm these Sotios with just a couple of Supers and Titans. In any case, we forgot to mention we were discussing Triclavians that the mid-grade set of the Mimesis implants, so these are the ones that increase your max damage cap, but also increase your spool time, if I remember correctly, something. Yep. Like, it takes you longer to get to where you need to go, but you can go higher. So now there's a mid-grade set being added. So that's pretty freaking cool. I want to see what the freaking max damage on a Leshak is now.
I mean, the max damage with the high grade is like, it's near dread levels, but it takes you, it does take you an appreciably long time. And for some of these ships, your spool time is already pretty high. The Leshak at least gets a bonus to that. Whereas for these other ships, like say the Nurgle, it's going to take you a couple minutes to get up to where you need to go. So with these, it's going to take you a really long time. But if you're, for instance, you're structure grinding or things like that, it could be worth that investment.
Well, Leshak always takes
a decent
amount.
For the Ikaturza, it tastes like seven pre-implant takes you like 7 minutes to regain all of the damage you would have lost compared to a Drekovic in that time period.
Leshak is king here because, I mean, even now it takes about just maybe a couple of minutes, just a bit more to make maximum spool anyway. The assault frigate and hack versions with the time it's taken, as you say, you can hit an insanely large amount, but no way are you going to use this outside of a structure bash.
Well, I mean, the benefit of the hack and the assault frigate is the extra tank. Like, it's the fact that you have those T2 resists and that tiny sig.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that there aren't other advantages to it. I'm just, you know, pointing out that 7 minutes is a long time to sacrifice damage, and now with spool up increasing, I haven't run the math, but what if it's like 10 minutes? Even engagements that go that long are practically unheard of.
Yeah, like 100%. I don't see these things being useful outside of structure bashes, except for maybe incursions, because I know the incursion runners use Leshaks on the sites that have structure grinds in them. Yes, there is PvE, which requires you to structure grind, by the way, and they use Leshaks for that. So I'm betting you there are going to be some incursion runners rocking these high-grade Mimesis implants just so they can get that structure grind down 30 seconds faster.
Min-max.
Well, speaking of min-maxing, let's actually talk about the Faction Warfare Treaty, because that's super interesting, and is kind of a counter against that, maybe?
Yes and no. So the faction warfare treaty for the uninitiated was a treaty that affects the Amar and Mimitar faction war zone. So this is like Amar, Mimitar, Losec area where faction war happens. And what it says is that the various sides will not protect their own mission hubs. So the Amar have a set of stations in which there are faction warfare mission agents, and they will not prevent the Mimitar from capturing those systems. Similarly, the Mimitar have a set of stations with faction warfare mission agents, and they will not prevent the Amar from capturing those systems, nor attempt to recapture them themselves. And what this is attempting to do is to remove artificially faction warfare missions from the game, because they're at a state where they're an extremely large faucet of LP, to the point where running plexes for the LP, for the payout that you get, is basically worthless. You might as well not even bother running the plexes unless it's for the purpose of unlocking these faction warfare missions. And then also, it's to try and adjust the way that the faction warfare battle plays out itself. Because for the last little while, in fact, shoot, just the most recent flip of the war zone. And what I mean by flip is the Amar had controlled, or pardon me, the Mimitar had been controlling the war zone. They were at what's called Tier 5, which means they owned a bunch of systems, and the I-hubs in those systems had been upgraded to Tier 5. And at that point, there are some benefits. You get to the LP payout and stuff like that. Basically, they're winning. And then at some point, somebody decided, hey, let's have the Amar win now. And the reason that happened was because the Mimitar LP was being farmed so hardcore, it was worth only like 500 ISK per LP for the Mimitar faction LP. However, people were still farming it a lot, and so they had massive, massive stockpiles. So by flipping the war zone and having the Amar suddenly take the whole war zone, now the Mimitar war zone, it's harder to generate LP because you don't have access to as many faction warfare stations, and the tier system reduces the amount of LP payout you get. So basically, if you're losing, it's really, really freaking bad. And the impact of that is the Amar LP, which at this point is very high in value, can now be farmed more easily. And the Mimitar LP, which is currently low in value, can't be farmed very well, and therefore its value will be raised, thus increasing the value of the stockpiles everyone has. So the TLDR of this is faction warfare, at least in the Amar-Mimitar war zone, has been less about actual war and more about manipulating the LP market such that people could make more and more ISK. It was absurd. Everybody recognized it was absurd. And at one point, two guys were sitting on comms like, hey, this is absurd. You know what we could do? Prevent people from using these stations. And they started talking to other people and realizing, hey, this is a thing that could actually happen. And then they signed this treaty. And the hope is that it will increase the value for all LP, because LP is now harder to get overall, which means that the amount of ISK that you get from running the plexes and from killing people of your opposing faction will now be higher. So you'll be more beneficial for you to be out in a plex where somebody can fight you, or be out shooting someone else and actually killing them so that you gain that LP.
Well, what exactly is the faction warfare mission itself? I have never run one.
Basically, it's like an acceleration-gated mission in a Dead Space pocket. You warp to an acceleration gate, you go in, you shoot some rats. It's super freaking easy. Like, right now, there are a couple different ways. The main two is in a Vicarial or in a Jackdaw. It used to be done in bombers a lot, like no-tank, speed-tank bombers. And a lot of the faction warfare community is not happy about them, actually, because you used to be able to cloak and take the acceleration gates, and then once you entered the thing, you'd still maintain your cloak, and you could sneak up next to the guy running the mission and catch him. And because people were running them in no-tank bombers, all you needed to do was scram web it. You didn't even have to put DPS, because the rats would do the rest. So, like, there are kill mails of people killing these faction warfare mission runners with just Vieters with a web and a scram on them. It's hilarious. But CCP changed it to where you couldn't activate the acceleration gate cloaked, and the beacon on the inside of the mission decloaks you at like 30 kilometers or whatever, like what they did with the regular faction warfare plexes. And so now you can't catch faction warfare plex mission runners like whatsoever, because they're inside a gated system. If they're on D-scan, they're watching it, they can run away. if they're in there and somehow they're not paying attention to D-scan, you'll go onto their grid, but they're likely in a Jackdaw like 100 kilometers away, which, by the way, the Jackdaw in prop mode is insta-warp. So they just then insta-warp away. And top that onto the boosters with the standing boosters, which have actually gone away now, which allowed people to just perma-roll through missions. They could perma-decline until they got something close to where they were. It meant that there wasn't even mission runners traveling gate to gate. They would just constantly recycle missions until they got one where they needed to be.
Yeah, I could see how that is somewhat cancerous.
Yeah, and so these guys got together and like, hey, let's stop this. Let's let each other capture the opponent's mission hubs. That way nobody can use these mission hubs. And that's basically what the Faction Warfare Treaty is. There's, looking at it, the big names that I knew of in the Faction Warfare community had all signed it. So when I first saw it, I thought, wow, this is like a unanimous thing. But apparently there are some folks who have not signed it due to various reasons. And of course, like all the pirate groups in the area who are not part of Faction Warfare, but are PvPing in the Faction Warfare area, they all have Faction Warfare alts running these missions, and they have all not signed this treaty. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic between the pirates who use these missions to make their ISK, but aren't directly involved in Faction Warfare, how they're going to respond to Faction Warfare trying to capture these systems. Maybe it'll pull the pirate into Faction Warfare so they can defend their income. Who knows? That's my hope, at least.
Does the alignment of the system switching directly affect the missions themselves, i.e. would they become unavailable?
Yes. So you have to be able to dock in the station in order to get the mission. And so if the system is captured by the opponent, you can't dock in that station anymore, therefore you cannot accept a mission.
But that docking only applies if you're in Faction Warfare. So if there are groups that can take these missions that aren't in the Faction Warfare...
Well, so they use alts. It's a polar alt, so you have an alt in Faction Warfare who can dock, and then you run it with another alt, usually.
Wow, that's so broke. Okay.
But in order to run it, like, you basically would... People use shuttles, so, or interceptors are usually Dramules, because they're even faster. So you have a polar in Faction Warfare, dock in the station, accept the mission that's close by you and that can be blitzed, and then you undock... follow or go to the area where it's supposed to be and warp your alt and the actual mission running ship to you, or use bookmarks, fleet warp, whatever. Have that alt run the mission while you pilot your shuttle, Dramule, interceptor back to the station, then complete the mission. And people like do multiples of these at a time, so they'd have multiple pullers in multiple locations accepting multiple missions, so that they just pull, run like 5 to 6 together, then have their mission runner go run those 5 or 6, then go back, complete them all, rinse and repeat.
Well, Godspeed, Faction Warfare leadership, because that does sound dumb. Should this treaty, in fact, lead to something interesting like these pirates joining Faction Warfare and bucking against the trend, we will absolutely cover it on this show, and if anyone is in Faction Warfare listening that wants to give us the inside scoop on how this effort is going, we would love your fan reporting.
And if I have messed up in that explanation, I'm sorry, I haven't done Faction Warfare before.
Things we have done, Nullsec Wars, and there have been some pretty interesting updates. So we've seen NCDOT invade Deadco and Teenal. This has primarily affected Ranger Regiment. They've lost a handful of systems. I would say nothing too major. It's also not clear that this NCDOT invasion is, like, super serious. It seems more like a content deployment to me. But that isn't to say that it won't result in some meaningful losses for the recipients.
Yeah, so on the subject of range management, it occurs to me I didn't put it in our show notes, but there's recently been a scandal where a member of the Army of Mango Alliance, I think her name is Little Rabbit or something like that. I forget the exact name. In any case, she's some like the Chinese version of a Twitch streamer type deal. And she's come over. She's relatively new to Eve, but she has spent a crap load of money on Eve, so to speak, and has now paid Ranger Regiment reportedly 5 trillion ISK in terms of SRP and investment in their NullSec infrastructure. And so people have been throwing out accusations of, oh, Ranger Regiment has now been, their loyalty has been bought by the Army of Mango. So the Ranger Regiment, although they're currently members of Dead Coalition, are now like subject to or loyal to the Army of Mango or something like that. And the response from Ranger Regiment is, no, this is just the person happened to be in Army of Mango, but they want to support our cause because, you know, we're from the same country, speak the same language, have shared history on the Serenity server, etc., etc. And this is just them providing us ISK in support of our goals, our common goals, and there is no loyalty as a result. And then there's Dead Coalition stuck in the middle of this, like, okay, so we have an alliance within our coalition being given trillions of ISK from an alliance outside our coalition. What do? And it's all very messy. But that is one asterisk we should put on this. Another one is that reportedly this invasion from Northern Coalition is explicitly a grudge match. They are not happy about how Dead Coalition acted during the invasion of Tribute from the Imperium. They're not happy about the deal still from the last big war, things like that. And so this is explicitly like them trying to give Deadco a black eye as a result of previous infractions on loyalty, quote unquote. And my final point,
to be clear though, it's more like a ruler to the backside rather than a complete eviction.
Yeah. Cause Dead Coalition's like main space is freaking Declan. Like it's three regions over. This is renter space / Dead Coalition member alliances having their own separate regions for their own personal business type deal. Sort of like if someone went and took Fountain. Like, Fountain is inhabited by the Initiative and Bastion and things like that, but, like, the Imperium's core is still in Delve. Except, like, Teenal is even less important to Deadco than Fountain is to the Imperium. Analogies aside, there has been one major fight in this war, and it took place in a system, I forget because I don't have the BR pulled up, but there was something like 300 billion ISK in capitals lost, the majority of which lost on the Northern Coalition side. And so it was NC plus Pandemic Horde versus Deadco. And this, of course, Deadco, and there was an Initiative Stuka fleet. I'm not sure which side they were on. But it was just a massive freaking dread brawl, for 300 billion ISK up there over a faction fort? No, an Asbel, if memory serves. So yeah, blood has been shed. Like, everybody's attention is now on this thing because, like, ooh, massive 100 billion ISK or multi-hundred billion ISK fights happening in capitals, no supers. Where do I sign up?
We'll see how that develops. But again, I don't really see this causing a major shift in the politics or the geography or anything like that. It'll just be interesting and fun to watch. There's, I think Deadco is aptly named for a couple reasons. One of them is they really don't have a lot of friends left in the game because of their various decisions. They've not really won the respect of a lot of different groups. As Artemis kind of touched on, NCDOT and PanFam aren't really pleased with how they handled themselves in the previous war. The agreement they signed was kind of embarrassing to have signed, so you can't imagine the Imperium actually highly esteems them from a military or political point of view. And with Army of Mango apparently buying out part of their coalition and them feeling uncomfortable about it, you got to think that they're feeling a little insecure about Legacy and Army of Mango down south. So they're kind of politically isolated right now. In terms of military strength, they are still very strong, but haven't really had the opportunity to like demonstrate they can leverage that strength very well in any of their recent conflicts. So they are in an interesting and somewhat precarious position. I think their biggest claim to security is that a lot of their space is somewhat out-of-the-way space that no one's in a big hurry to invade. But if they ever do run into trouble, at least right now, it's not clear who would come help them or if they could stand against a full invasion from. And they certainly can't do it against the Imperium, we know that. Doubt they could do it against PanFam. But there aren't really that many alliances that would be in a position to want to hit them like that. So it's kind of like Providence.
Yeah, like my thing is with Deadco, when you started off your diatribe there, you're like, nobody really likes them. And in 99% of cases, when I hear nobody really likes someone, I'm like, yeah, Eve needs more bad guys. I'm rooting for this guy. They're certainly the underdog. But then you continue on, like, nobody really likes them because they've just disappointed all of their allies. It's like, well, it's not that they've made enemies, it's that they've just disappointed allies.
Yeah, they haven't made enemies, they've just lost their friends.
Spinning narratives and yada yada yada. And I'm like, you're right, I'm gonna happily spin this narrative. You can feel free to not like it and go shoot me over it, please.
The thing is, they're not really the bad guys either. They're not taking any initiative to do things that would upset people. They are just kind of like passively, like you said, disappointing people in various ways. Like they're not Eve's antagonists. They're not, say, like the Bob or the Goon Swarm of old, where they're like a big power that everyone wants to see taken down a peg. They don't have like a really infamously toxic culture that people are sort of standing up against. There's no like hook that would position them as like a big bad that people want to take down, or like an annoying group that people want to see punished. They're just kind of like there and not doing anything for anyone. They're not providing good fights for Imperium. They're not providing reliable allyship for their neighbors. They're just kind of around.
They are nevertheless like still a supporting character you have to pay attention to, because despite the fact that they aren't active, so to speak, they aren't aggressive, they are still nonetheless powerful both economically and militarily. So
they've got a huge supercap fleet.
By no means misinterpret our statements as discounting the power of Dead Coalition, as evidenced by the fact that they still exist, even though they have disappointed multiple allies. Speaking of economic power, should we hop into the monthly economic report? Oh no, we should discuss the Legacy War, shouldn't we?
Yeah, so we kind of touched on Legacy Army of Mango and what they're doing up north, but the real news is down south, where Winter Coalition is starting to collapse. I think it's all but official that they have conceded the war against Legacy and have begun a massive withdrawal. They've also started to lose constituent alliances and corporations from their coalition, generally speaking. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Winter Coalition, other than their botters and I hate them, but they have performed very well in this war. I think they held longer and fought better against stiffer odds than I think anyone thought they would, but, you know, it feels like the numbers game kind of caught up to them eventually, where, like, Legacy is a big, big coalition, and Winter is kind of standing by themselves against it. And there is really only so much they could reasonably expect it to do. I think they performed well above expectations, but it's not terribly surprising that they eventually did have to concede.
I mean, honestly, it's like a series of unfortunate events for Winterco in this loss, because they had a fantastic defense. Like, it was, the Sinojammer wall was real. It was just an unfortunate attempt at a dread bomb on a Titan, which lost them the first iHub and Detrid. And then, like, Blackout hit, and so all of their totally legit ADM raising V&Is, which, by the way, also got nerfed, suddenly couldn't keep the ADMs up anymore. And then also, despite the fact they survived that and were actually in the middle of a counteroffensive due to some recent support from Pandemic Horde and Pandemic Legion, then Army of Mango shows up from Serenity and initially are like, hey bros, let's be friends. But some Legacy folks or Imperium folks or somebody stages in Army of Mango space in order to shoot at Winterco. And Winterco says, yo, this is not okay, we have to shoot you now. And so suddenly Army of Mango, who is in Winterco's main time zone, joins on Legacy's side. And that's what tips the numbers such that Legacy can outform Winterco in literally every time zone. Up until that point, during Chinese time zone, Winterco, for the most part, had the numbers advantage. And because of the way time zone tanking in its legitimate sense, like they want to fight in their time zone where their players are active, they could use that advantage to defend almost indefinitely. But with the addition of AOM to Legacy, it was just like the nail in the coffin.
And AOM was kind of a delayed reaction, right? Because they came in, they were more or less new players in terms of skill points. We all knew that they had lots of experience from Serenity Server, but they were kind of gated in how well they could leverage that just in terms of raw power. But that was a ticking time bomb. The more power they got, or excuse me, the more time they got to skill up, whether injectors or just naturally, the worse it was going to get for Winter. And then, like, the tipping point was hit. They've now been on the server for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, so Windsor Coalition is retreating to Cache. They've already sent their English-speaking players there. They may have moved their Chinese-speaking players over there already. And then they're going to be moving from Cache even further north. Obviously, Legacy Coalition is looking to, like, continue to push. They're putting pressure on Cache, making sure Winter Coalition doesn't have a stable footing, so to speak, on their entire route back up to their own lands. And then also, like, suddenly there is Detrid, Innsmouth, Wicked Creek, Scalding Pass, all of these regions which no longer have stable inhabitants. And so, like, Villy legitimately put up a Reddit post saying, hey, anybody want to come live in these regions? If you're not actively hostile to Winter Co., or pardon me, to Legacy Coalition, we'll be happy to welcome you in as neighbors. So Legacy is actively looking to set up a nice little buffer state in there.
We'll see how well that action happens. It seems like whether or not that buffer state gets successfully established or not, the war is kind of done. What will happen in the post-war situation, I think, is an interesting question. We'll probably see a little bit of consolidation, perhaps small jockeying for position of those buffer state alliances, depending on how hands-on Villy wants to be in terms of, like, arranging the politics of that area. We'll have to see on that one. But it's definitely interesting, and it's kind of cool to see things happen. Overall, I just want to thank Winter Co. and Legacy for one of the most interesting wars we've had in quite a long time. They have just torn the house down in terms of, like, a proper, long, drawn-out conflict between two big powers. Most of the time when you see this kind of thing happen, it's like a pretty quick collapse. You see the one power easily overwhelm the other one, and they just kind of fold because they don't want to engage and they want to preserve their power. Winter Co. and Legacy stood strong against each other in multiple offensives and counter-offensives and all that shit, and it was just hella interesting.
I second this opinion.
Alright. Speaking of Winter Co. and their botting, we have some information from the monthly economic and security reports, and some interesting stuff. So this is a post-end of blackout report, that's a good question. Does it entirely comprise the end of blackout or only part of it?
Blackout is now entirely shown within an economic report, but I don't think there's been enough time after blackout to properly see the impacts of blackout ending. Similar to how, like, when we got the monthly economic report shortly after blackout started, like, you could start to see the way data was going to go, and you could sort of tell yourself a story based on it, but I don't think there's enough information there to properly form an idea of how the end of blackout has affected the economy.
Well, there was some interesting stuff in there. You see ISK destroyed declining in August, which I guess detractors would say is from blackout. But on the other hand, it's continued to decline, see, with blackout ending. So that could be somewhat seasonal. Interestingly, ISK produced has been declining since February, and nothing has basically stopped that.
Yeah, I mean, going back on the destruction thing, I was trying to look at this graph and figure out, like, is this seasonal? Is this just because we've had a bunch of wars happening? And as we already mentioned, this current war is winding down. And even looking back into the lowest point on this graph isn't where we're at now. It was actually in July of 2017 in terms of the lowest ISK destroyed in a given, like, time period. However, this graph, it's labeled as using a 30-day moving average of market price or base price where market volume is lacking. So we're not entirely certain if that includes an adjustment for inflation. So if this is not adjusted for inflation, in which case there's not the price increase or the devaluation of ISK from 2017 until now, in which case we're actually at a very low point in terms of destruction, or it is adjusted for inflation to an extent, and we aren't even at the lowest point of destruction we ever have been, and all the people, like, crying, Eve is dying, Eve is actually dead now, are, like, the usual riffraff. What's the term? Crying wolf? I don't even know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this is a good thing, production and destruction both being down, but it's also not the end of the world.
I think there's a lot of sentiment analysis that can be done as well, in that a lot of Eve's biggest champions are now souring in the game for one reason or another. Blackout really pissed off the Null guys, some of whom were, like, super engaged on Eve's future. And then the removal of Blackout really soured some of the non-Null guys, and even some of the Null guys that were pro-it. Like, you now see Yintan, for instance, being extremely negative about Eve's prospects. And very uncertain about its direction. A lot of the folks that returned to Noir also souring on Eve's and its prospects. There's a kind of a, not a wait and see element, but a ticking clock element where CCP is expected to give us some indication about, okay, now that this is over, where do we go from here? And a growing sentiment on both sides of things that the answer to that question is going to be extremely important and better come soon. Would you agree with that characterization?
Yes.
We will see. We'll talk a little bit more about those expectations on our next episode when we tackle the CSM minutes, and it will also be conveniently placed the week before Eve Vegas. We'll see how that goes. Some other interesting stuff. Delve, once again, continuing to be an economic powerhouse, mining more than several regions combined. They are also not exporting things, at least not a lot. If you look at their ISK and minerals generated compared to ISK and minerals exported, it's extremely lopsided. Again, fueling the speculation of, like, what exactly is all that stuff going for? Keep star in every system? Question mark.
Stockpile, because they don't want to devalue their members' income anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's potential, yeah. Could be it.
Like, even before they reached these levels, people were complaining about the low cost of supers in Delve, or rather, bragging about the low cost of supers in Delve, which is the same as miners complaining about the low value of their income.
From a military standpoint, though, there's like a super interesting question that I guess is going to be around there until it gets answered, but regardless of what you think of the Imperium's on-field capabilities and performance and how well they can execute that, like, just in terms of sheer logistics, could they ever lose a war? Like, they can afford to eat more losses than probably every other Null coalition combined and still be totally fine.
Yep.
This we'll know eventually. One would presume they'll get into that kind of fight at some point.
Or they'll just blow everyone.
Yeah, and we'll never have to find out.
Yet another foreshadowing of our minutes to read through.
Yeah. We're pretty much done. Just wanted to go one little piece of trivia. Great Wildlands, Hala Hala, has the fourth highest import and export rate. They export more, and also in terms of what they're generating versus what they're exporting, it's high. I suspect that's probably it being used as a through point for evacuations from the south, but still cool. A reminder to everyone that even though it is no longer directly managed by me, we do have the NTAC 6Z project up and running. It's under a different name now, but still going strong. So if you guys want to head out and try Great Wildlands, you want to get in on some of the action in Scalding Pass and the area down there, N-6 is a great staging point. It'll have all the market stuff up and running so you can buy all the ships you need to have all the fun you want down south. On the security front, nothing super interesting other than over 2,800 account bans for botting-related activities, which is cool because that's about, what, half or a little over half of what it was last month when Blackout hit, kind of showing me that CCP is continuing this very aggressive pace to bot bans. And related to that, they've said specifically that they are watching player behavior carefully to see, you know, how people suspected of botting reacted to Blackout and are now reacting to it being lifted. Like, that interaction is something that's being monitored very carefully. And finally, the last cool thing, and if you've reported bots recently, you will have seen this. They are giving feedback to reporters when you submit a bot report. I reported 3 botters in Fraternity Space and got feedback that, yes, in fact, they were bots, and CCP took action, and I felt really good about seeing that message.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Finally. Thank you.
Not only finally, but, like, that feeling of finally, it instills more confidence in CCP in general and the game in general, because now I, like, know specifically that they are taking action on bots, and not just in a general sense, but, like, specific bots that have impacted my play, I now know are getting nuked, and that feels good. Moving into some host highlights, I just got a short one. Had a really great fight against Provi Block with Wrecking Coalition, or excuse me, Wrecking Crew. I was in a Hick. Really enjoying flying a Hick in these bigger fights. Put it off training for it for forever because I assumed, like, Hicks and Dictors, I just wouldn't enjoy that much. I am being, pleasantly surprised at how fun it can be, like, running bubbles and scramming different people, especially with the really powerful Hick scrams. I do think they're a little oppressive to small gang warfare, being as strong and as far ranged as they are, but I can't deny that they are very fun to have when you're the person doing it. Artemis?
My highlight is actually fiddling with the new invasion sites. So I had some time while scouting for some move ops, and I was looking, or I had a spare account. And normally I make ISK by running abyssal sites, but I triple box the tier 4s and tier 5s. And I couldn't do that. And the new abyssal, or pardon me, the new invasion conduits, the emerging conduits came out, and they can be soloed. But they're relatively easy and relatively difficult, depending on how efficient you want to be at it. And what I liked about these was, number one, you can bring up to 3 people and not lose any payout, so that's nice. So if you run into a system where somebody else is already running the conduit, it doesn't matter if you join them, it's sort of like benefiting them. Barring, like, there's a small amount of ISK that you could get in loot, which you may lose out on and people could get salty about, but meh. And then what I liked is these sites are mostly frigates and destroyers with a single cruiser at the end, but they're all Triglavian frigate and destroyers and cruiser. And so their damage ramps up over time. And, like, so what I initially did is I went in there like everybody else was, and I was using a battleship and trying to figure out, okay, what battleship is best for this job? And I figured out the Vindicator is the best battleship for this job because there's a trick you can do to get to zero on where the rats spawn and just 90% web nuke everything, but I didn't have a good Vindy pilot. And so I tried to find alternatives, Rattlesnake's a thing, kind of meh, and then I realized, no, wait a minute, these are all frigates and desis. Why am I using a battleship to shoot frigates and desis? I don't need that. Let me just downgrade to something that's good at shredding frigates and desis. And so I played around with a bunch of things, ended up coming with a ridiculous Loki flit, with 425 autocannons, getting like 700 DPS. But then the trick was, you also had to have an insane amount of tank. Like, if you're soloing these things, you have to be able to tank at least 900 DPS cold. And so that's the Loki fit I ended up with after much trial and error, is a 425mm autocannon Loki with like 700 DPS and 900 DPS tank, and it's cap stable with a bit extra because there are newts on field. And so that was how I entertained myself for a day while I was doing scouts for move ops.
Wow.
Damn.
Lave?
Oh, I have to admit, guys, I have been absolutely boring. Work has kicked me in the teeth the last couple of weeks, so I don't really have much of an EVE related shout out to this. Only to say that work has the absolutely insane pleasure and ability to fuck up all amounts of EVE time.
It does indeed. That kind of leads into my shout out pretty nicely. Attended TwitchCon last week, and wow, that was fun. A sold out event at the San Diego Convention Center. I'd never been to San Diego before, so that was cool. And in general, yes, exhausting, time consuming, but fun. And I want to give a shout out to all the EVE bros in the Twitch streaming community. Thank you for creating such interesting and cool content and being a part of Twitch and bringing EVE to the wider streaming community. Really appreciate it. And there are too many good streamers to name individually, but I know for a fact some are working on some really interesting stuff, and I will have the opportunity to shout them out individually in the near future because they're doing really cool things.
Ooh.
So that's it.
My shout out goes to Fat Elvis Presley. He's from Dirt and Glitter. And I shout out to him and also to like all of the other people who have helped explain this faction warfare treaty thing to me. I found it super interesting, but like I said, never done faction warfare before. So the nuance and the intricacy of how this treaty had to work and the politics between the groups and the mechanics that go around it and why faction warfare is so absolutely screwed right now. I appreciate Fat Elvis Presley for one, being a fan of the show and recognizing my voice. And two, helping explain this thing to me.
My shout out is, again, a bit of a non-EVE related one, but one of the things that I've particularly missed is Star Trek. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the Star Trek Picard now that we've got a date in January where it's going to come out. I'm just looking forward to it. I know it's sad, but do you know what? Missed it.
Yeah, and I want to just, like, on a Star Trek-related note, he's recently passed, Aaron Eisenberg, famous for playing Nog on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I've recently, not related to his death in particular, but just because I enjoyed it so much and I wanted to share it, I've been getting my dad, who is a Star Trek fan, but never really engaged after the original series. Like, he wasn't a big fan of Next Generation, didn't really follow much of the stuff that came after. We have been watching Deep Space Nine together, off and on, and goddamn, that show is so good, and goddamn, Nog is a really cool character, and I just want to thank Aaron for his tremendous performance, and just wish him the best in whatever comes next for us after we pass.
Well said.
All right, and on that somewhat somber note, that's it, guys. Go to declarationswar.com to participate in our poll. Reminder that Noir is recruiting, and we can use a few good mercs. Join CafeNoir.ingame for more info, and wherever you are and whatever you're doing, good hunting, listeners.